everyone, welcome to the Cinema Spooktacular 3, The Search for Spook. That's right, 3 years, Cecily and I have been rounding up all the spooks and scares for Halloween. By the way, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
The one I've been speaking of. This year, we're doing kind of a format of one contemporary horror flick, a time-tested classic, and wild card.
Yeah, can't believe it's...
Each of our spook searches.
Can't believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this now.
Yeah, a lot of time has passed.
Yeah, and as always, we've been engaging with a lot of people on social media and the forums at baldmove.com during this process. We've been kind of loosey-goosey about it. We have a long-running list of movies that we want to cover, and the ones that we choose are kind of just based on what we have time for and what we're in the mood for, what we're really excited about. So we don't have a really set list before we start this thing.
Right. And we try to, because we had a debate. Netflix just dropped a kind of horror film. What was that movie?
In the Shadow of the Moon.
In the Shadow of the Moon. And we're like, oh, that's kind of recent and people probably like it. But you know what? It's not spooky. It's an action film.
Right.
Like, we have to make some editorial decisions.
Make some hard cuts along the way.
Have to make some hard cuts. We're trying to bring us the spookier, what we think is going to be the spookiest, scariest stuff. And it's not a perfect slate, as we'll find.
Mm-hmm.
A little word about our release schedule. As befits this podcast, we have a spooky release schedule some have called Unnatural. This first episode drops on the 10th of October. The second one drops 10 days later on the 20th, which is a Sunday, because... YOLO. And then the third drops on the 30th of October. That's right. All Hallows Eve.
Ooh, spooky.
So the movies we saw for this first edition of the Spooktacular of the Year is Halloween, the original, 1978. Spring, the 2014 movie brought to you by the same people that brought the breakout hit of last Spooktaculars, The Endless.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw The Brothers Gunn, written David Yarovesky, directed Brightburn, which I was really excited about.
Mm-hmm. This is a 2019 release.
2019. It's the young blood. It's the new kid on the block. Okay, first movie for the Spooktacular is the classic 1978 John Carpenter slasher flick, Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
I want to start with the positives of this because, you know, this is an older horror film and it definitely shows its age and
right. Budget
and time constraints.
Yeah. If you are, let's just say, if you are a person who's never seen this movie,
mm-hmm. Then
there's a reason to watch it. Mm-hmm. It's not because you are a true horror veteran now and want to go back and have some real spooks, because it's definitely not that. But you can see where all of these other things got their bones from.
Yeah, it's like, is the Maltese Falcon an incredibly affecting crime movie today? No, but was it completely foundational and revolutionary for its time? Yes, and I feel like that's the way Halloween can be enjoyed today. Positives, I think the soundtrack is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's iconic, it's tense, it still holds up as a cool sounding horror
soundtrack. John
Carpenter
did the music for the
Okay. I believe so.
For the movie as well. He did everything.
I think the design of Michael Myers himself is really solid. Like, you know, famously, it's essentially a James T. Kirk mask with the eyes slightly widened, with the flesh painted like corpse, like white color. And it is spooky and creepy, and it's as iconic as Jason's mask from Friday the 13th. I think the camera work was inventive for its time. It was one of the first movies to use a lot of Steadicam, which is how they got a lot of the like first person POV shots of Michael stalking his prey. Clearly, that was innovative, and it was very effective and terrifying, and putting you into the scenes. And you know, this originally worked in 1978 because I was reading Roger Ebert's review and he gave it a perfect 4 stars. He just went on and on about how terrifying this film is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of the main reasons that, you know, you were freed from dolly shots and cranes. You could just like peek in through windows. You could like, you know, dodge behind a wall as Michael Myers. And I think that really put people into it. And a lot of the tropes we take for granted today, just the fact that you've got a slasher out there, that there's these teenagers all having sex and doing drugs and doing naughty things that are kind of being punished by this weirdo faceless killer were probably all really fresh and interesting at the time. And I think Jamie Lee Curtis is a really good, I think she's the only one in the cast that's actually a teenager, but she plays like a very mature
40-year-old woman.
she plays like a 19-year-old, 40-year-old woman. She's very kind of buttoned down, and she's a quote-unquote good girl.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but she's not judgy of her friends, and she's kind of accommodating to them, but she's kind of caught up in the mix of all this. And, you know, Michael Myers' fascination with her is solely because of kind of like an accidental association.
Right, because she's just one of the first people he saw.
Happens to walk past his childhood home that he's squatting
in. Then she went right
in.
Up to the door,
yeah,
to deliver a key.
Right, because of the real estate deal that they're trying to go down. So
right, it's. I think it's a. It was a good movie. I think I appreciate it a little bit more the second time I've seen it.
Yeah.
Now with you, the first time I just wholly was not expecting what I saw there.
Mm-hmm.
From them refraining from using a lot of blood, but also
that's the thing that really sticks out is that all of the murders are just very, very tame. Like
right.
This movie, minus the breasts, could easily be PG-13 today.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, there's absolutely no shame in, you know, showing the nudity in the movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder why they didn't do a lot of blood. Maybe it was a budget thing. Because, I mean, it's not just that there's really no blood. There's no visible stab wounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking of the scene in the beginning with his sister when he kills her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he comes outside and finds his parents standing on the sidewalk and his knife is covered in this blood.
Right.
But she doesn't have any visible stab wounds, but you can clearly see all of her chest and belly. I don't know.
No slashes.
Yeah.
I think you're probably right. This budget was very small. It's less than $300,000. They had
okay.
a very tight 20-day filming schedule. So
okay, that makes more sense.
There's a couple of takes where it's like, boy, I wonder if they had some time for reshoots, if they could got this, because there's a little bit of almost Ed Woodian kind of staging and things not exactly going right.
Right. There are some shots that I just think are kind of inexcusable.
Yeah.
Like him standing in the middle of a sidewalk and you can just see half of him very close up to the camera watching her walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And I commented to you that I find it ridiculous that he's wearing this really silly mask that's painted white and it's got all of this brown hair in the middle of the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, oh, he's not wearing a mask because it has all the hair in it.
Right.
But, you know, anybody driving by would see that.
Well, not only that, but there's a lot of scenes of him just driving around creepy in the mask and standing around creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And no one acknowledges it. And I get it that it's close to Halloween, but like no one acknowledges the fact that they keep seeing. And I feel like that would have been creepier if people are like, who is this fucking psycho? But it's almost like played off as like, it's almost a figment of a Jamie Lee Curtis's imagination. And that brings also like the editing in this film. I think you would, there's a lot, this is a very old fashioned edited film where like the cold open where they zoom out and you see Michael Myers standing there, the little kid with the knife, and his parents are just kind of horrified. They hold that shot for like what feels like 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh my God, is anyone going to cut? Is anyone going to cut? Can like people leave? Can they go to craft services now? What's happening? And there's a lot of other like weird jarring cuts when there's a murder happening or when there's like when Michael Myers is breaking out of the prison and he's doing his weird circus de soleil act.
That's not a cut so much as my question there is what kind of crazy is he? What is he driven by? I don't understand how he can be so crazy that he can't, you know, think. He can't.
Yeah, is he a mindless killer? Is he capable of complex tasks like
exactly
driving a car, like setting traps and machinations for people?
He knows exactly how to get back to his old house and presumably the directions and the traffic laws. He doesn't arouse any suspicion in the stolen vehicle, gets right back there. But also he has to do the spider crawl over the car to steal it.
Yeah, like I thought it was very far into the movie, I don't think they established the fact that this guy's super strong. Like, I just thought he was just a run-of-the-mill crazy person. He's grown up in mental institutions. Like, how is he so jacked? How is he so ripped? Is he just naturally that kind of strong? Because to the point where, like, when they show him, like, the fact that he just stole, what is his mother's gravestone?
His sister's.
Sister's gravestone. I just laughed out loud because I'm like, who the fuck can pick up a gravestone? But apparently just Michael Myers is that freakishly strong. So, but I thought, like, yeah, wouldn't it be just more terrifying if he just came forward, ripped open a door and grabbed the person and just threw them out and then took off? Like, why the spider monkey routine, jumping on the car?
Right. It's just to give Dr. Loomis an excuse to say, Michael's loose and that's pure evil that's escaped. So what you're supposed to understand is that he is supernatural in some kind of way.
But they don't establish it. And again, like, if he was unnaturally quick and agile, I would get it. Or if he was just, like, this strong gorilla crazy person, like Jason Voorhees, I would get it. But I don't feel like they kind of established it. And again, they wrote the script in less than 10 days. And I was reading an article where John Carpenter, like, was giving the direction for Michael Myers and, like, his motivation and stuff. And he's like, no, that's not that kind of thing. Like, you're supposed to be, like, this remorseless, thoughtless killer. And his direction is literally, you walk from this mark to this mark and do as little as possible. Just let the mask and the breathing noises kind of carry it. And it kind of works, but I felt like, yeah, the idea of this person being pure evil, or if he was, I don't know, if they're trying to suggest he's possessed by some kind of demonic force, but, like, how is he so crazy strongman strong?
There's like an asylum prison yard that he works out in all the time.
Yeah, and he came out asylum swole.
Yeah, I understand how you didn't get this the first time. Maybe another watch would reward you, but he actually killed the sister for no reason whatsoever. But while he was in the asylum, he was possessed by a demon. And then when he got out, he was possessed by a mechanic. I know it's not there in the text, so you figure
really?
It out.
You have to see the 2018 remake to understand all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I get your point. They should have given him, like, less impetus and more, you know, let the audience draw their own conclusions. Because John Carpenter also said that this isn't about good and evil, that Jamie Lee Curtis is not the embodiment of pure, virtuous girl
things. She did
and he's not. He isn't thwarted because she's pure good and he's not pure evil. He said things along those lines.
It's funny because the text of his movie is just a plain reading of that. Like, she at one point pushes back, like, I can't remember what she says, but it's like, you know, I've done stuff. But it's almost like the nerdy kid trying to, like, you know, oh, sure you did, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Sure you did. I bet you fucked all the guys.
Yeah, your boyfriend's at another school. I get it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so she is set as, like, the sober, responsible, good girl. And Michael Myers is said to be the personification of evil. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of other weird things just in the production because they had a very tight schedule. Like, there's several scenes in, like, the first act of the film where the streets are wet, streets are dry, streets are wet, streets are dry. Like, it's kind of weird like that. There is just the sex scenes are crazy to me because they're always, like, less than 30 seconds long. And the guy, like, that one where Michael Myers is killing his sister, kind of, like, tracking her through the house as he sees her having sex. Like, that scene was, like, less than 30 seconds, and the guy comes down, like, fully dressed, like, ah, had a great sex session. And then later on, when the friend of Jamie Lee Curtis is having sex with her boyfriend, it's, like, less than 30 seconds, and she's, like, totally satisfied
right.
with it.
Yep.
It's really fucking funny. And then when her friend is being murdered naked by Michael Myers, and she manages to call Jamie, and she's just moaning and groaning and doing the, like, when Harry met Sally, I'll have what she's having phone call.
Yes.
It just is kind of hilarious. But there's also a lot of, like, Jamie Lee Curtis struggling with doorknobs to get away. There's in the last act, like, Michael Myers has her dead to rights, like, two or three times. And he's just suddenly hilariously inept with swinging the knife and can't kill her.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that, like, once they dispense with that and they just get down to, like, you know, the unkillable Michael Myers coming after Jamie Lee Curtis and he gets shot, and that stuff actually started to become effective.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the movie was long for what it was trying to do. And it felt a lot padded out by them just wanting to make a feature length rather than, I mean, it's only 91 minutes, so I get it. You cut 10, 15 minutes of teenagers just kind of fucking around and tighten it up, and now you're looking at like a made-for-TV movie, but I think that's kind of what you got.
Right. I've seen maybe some of the, or I have seen some of the more recent ones, but classic horror movies aren't exactly my cup of tea, so I haven't seen a lot of them. But I can't say that I'll follow up and watch more of these.
Nah, I mean, we just it's interesting to see the DNA of the slasher film and how it's evolved over time.
Right.
And it's a great concept. It just and obviously it worked for its day. I mean, there's a reason it's one of the hallowed, no pun intended, movies of its genre.
Right.
But it's just like, you know, I just saw The Exorcist, I think, last year with Jim for a commissioned podcast. And that's a scary movie that really fucking holds up because there's a lot of movie there and there's a lot of atmospheric set and there's a lot of setting of the characters and just the kind of horror and creepiness and dread. And it takes its time to establish that before it gets into. Whereas this just, again, feels like it is what it is, and a late 70s low budget, incredibly constrained horror film.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which given last weekend seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah well, lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds.
Do you have anything else you want to say about Halloween?
That's all I've got. You want to move on to the next one?
Yes. Next one is the kind of wild card movie. It's the movie Spring, which is from 2014, directed by Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, who also directed The Endless, which we were really high on the last Spooktacular.
Yes, we covered that one. All of our previous Spooktaculars are going to be in the show notes, too, of course. But this one is not... Okay, so they made a couple of movies.
Yes.
And speaking of low budget type of things, they do the most with what they have. They made a previous or a prequel to The Endless called Resolution. I think this movie Spring falls in between those two being made.
Spring is an urban fantasy romance, and I wanted it to be more of a horror film.
Yes.
It's like The Shape of Water, except for it's the shape of whatever monster she's turning into. I don't want to, I mean, obviously spoilers for all this stuff. If you haven't seen it, you shouldn't be listening to this part of the podcast. The leads are very attractive and appealing, but, and I think they do a good job. And actually the movie looks really well. And kudos to people to pick out all the locations and stuff. But it just always goes for humor or romance when I was wanting to be scary. And I was really expecting kind of like a gut punch, jaw drop, kind of awesome moment at the end that kind of recontextualizes everything. And they just went for a conventional happy ever after story. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say that I feel like I love what they're going for. The blend of horror and romance and all of those things. I feel like it's done really well. I didn't find myself wanting more of a horror movie, but I did find myself wanting a little bit of a different ending.
So the basic concept of this movie is there is a young woman, apparently a young woman who's over 2,000 years old, and she's got some kind of protean genetic abnormality that causes her to rapidly like lose control of her body's like cellular mutations and whatnot every, I think, either like 14 or 21 years at some kind of point. And she has to have sex with a man, take his genetic material and combine it with her DNA. And she essentially like becomes a new person.
Right. She gets pregnant every spring and then reuses those cells to reinvent herself, essentially.
Yeah, like she like digests the fetus and turns it into like internally. I forget what the word they say. It's like there's two things. She can either have a normal pregnancy, in which case she loses her immortality powers, or she remixes that DNA in some kind of cocooning process, and they show it. It's pretty disgusting. There is some body horror here where she's turning into squid people and insects and like werewolves, and there's a lot of points where I thought this was like a werewolf movie, that he's like falling in love with the werewolf next door or something like that. But
I thought it was going to be sort of like a succubus thing where she has to.
That would have been
it.
Cool. But the fact that it's, you know, and there's also just ludicrous amounts of exposition where she's like, check this for like 2,000 years. I don't know what the fuck was going on.
Well, not until the end. I think the first two thirds of this movie are really great in the way they set it up and the way that you only see flashes of, you know, she's about to transform. You see some bones under her shirt and she injects herself and you're not sure what's going to happen. You see her inject herself after like a full transformation and she's just in a shower with blood everywhere. Like, right. You're not exactly sure what's going to happen.
There's some implied attacking of villagers.
Right.
And tourists.
Exactly. And it isn't until the very or the ends that they just like quickly exposit via the text of the
script. I felt like the whole
there.
Third act was just exposition of like, check this out. I'm a 2,000-year-old shape-shifting bozo, but in the last 30 years, I started studying molecular biology, and it turns out I got all these. It's like, what did she do in the Dark Ages without syringes? Like, what was and plus they explain so much, but there's still so many things up in the air.
Right. And then they even kind of undo some things from before. Like there's one scene where she has a couple of bunnies and she goes to this cave with this book and she does this.
Yeah,
she does this whole ritual where she draws in blood on the walls. And you think you just don't know what kind of thing is controlling this. And in the end, she explains, oh, that was just the thing I tried.
I've tried science and it wasn't working. So I went to witchcraft. I'm like, what? You didn't get your fill? Witchcraft in like the 12th century,
right?
Like I'm sure there was all kinds of fucking occult things you could have tried, and rabbits you could, because I thought that maybe the rabbits were emergency backup food for if she needed to suck blood, because I was also like, is she a werewolf, is she some kind of fucking vampire, like what is she, a zombie or like a mummy or what the hell? And like the ultimate answer was way too much explanation, kind of boring. And also, like, there was a sense of ominous dread. Like, I thought that one of the other things is she might be kind of like an Edward from Twilight, where she's, like, the perfect predator, and she's very charming and seductive, and she's telling this whole guy, like, hey, this isn't going to work out, and you're not going to like what you're going to get. And I thought she's just going to eat the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, it was going to be, like, a Black Widow type of situation.
I would have liked that.
And they shot it at the end, like, this guy has fucking gotten Twitter paid to this monster and he's going to march right into her jaws. But it turns out,
yeah, he's got nothing left to lose in a foreign country.
She
never
just fell
be
in
missed.
Love with him. And the other thing they don't understand is like this woman is 2,000 years old. This is Twilight's problem. Edward is like 180 years old. He lived through the civil fucking war. What the fuck does this 16-year-old girl, why is the fascination there?
Right.
Why is this person who's seen 2,000 years of world history and is incredibly well educated, is wealthy, is a globe, why is she fascinated with this American who is having like a European fling just to get over a bad relationship and life situation? No, it wasn't bad.
His
mother died. His family died. He's like angry, and he's like, I just don't understand. Like they didn't. There was a little bit of physical chemistry there, but again, she's 2,000 years old.
Right. He essentially like pestered her into falling in love with him. I didn't understand.
She seduced at least 60 generations of men to continue her life. Like I don't. If it's just a physical connection, I don't understand why she quote unquote falls in love with him.
Right.
They didn't really. You know, it's a sweet kind of high school college level romance, but they cast a 2,000-year-old immortal to play the girl part of it, and it just that really kind of bothered me, and it a little fell flat for me.
Yes. I mean, it's a tale as old as time. We all want to feel important to someone who's really old and knowledgeable. I can understand the appeal of that. It doesn't need to be justified, really. I think that I just think this story would have held up a little bit better if we hadn't known in the end what the choice was.
Yeah.
If they had ended it on that shot of, you know, she says the last monster I turn into before I regenerate my cells or however it works, it's going to be the biggest and nastiest of all. And you're probably going to die.
Right.
And if they zoom in on his face
and you hear her transforming,
you hear her growl and things
into all kind of like, and like her bones are moving unnaturally. Like if they just faded to black,
you just leave it there and let us suppose.
Yeah. I would have liked the movie probably twice as much as I did, which still, I don't know if this is a solid recommendation because again, I was just looking for something scary, and there was like, and they also play with that, like they're in like some crypt together, like in like a day or two before she's going to transform, and he tries to get close to Chris to kiss her, and she like kind of briefly morphs into an animal and snaps at him. So it's like they kept
and
that element
like
of
some,
dread and danger there.
There are comedy moments where they're on a rock and they're having they're by the seaside having a chat,
yeah,
and they're kissing and it's all sweet. And then you fan down and she's got an octopus arm. It's like, that was funny.
Yeah,
when you
got,
used it like a scary before.
He's got a scorpion tail that I thought might have even stung him a couple times, but that never really. It's almost a commentary of how dumb young men are,
right?
Like, hey, I've got kids and I might have a sexually transmitted disease and I don't have a job and I don't have, and like there's, you'll still find a guy being like, well, I don't care, I love you how you are. Like I don't know if that's the moral they were going for, like some kind of Black Widow situation. They lost their nerve at the end by having her have the conventional, because they mentioned that's happened to her mom too, right? Like this happened and she fell in love 2,000 years ago and that's how she got born, and then they died in Pompeii. There's also the weird thing where the volcano explodes in the background, and I thought like, oh, that's the thing, like this is some kind of family curse, like the second she finds love then the volcano comes, but that wasn't it either.
Well, we don't know that, we don't know the answer to that one,
but the volcano erupts and like, what the fuck.
I mean, she also says that she doesn't really understand how it works. It's just, this is her understanding so far.
Right.
So it could still be the volcano. Maybe she didn't fall in love with him.
when the volcano erupts, she just pulls you out of your cycle and you're immortal.
I mean, I still highly recommend this movie. I think it's great for something that you haven't really seen before. Not exactly scary if you're looking for scary.
It's
but
more of a date night movie than a spooktacular is what I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're like, if you are a teenager or like to remember what being a teenager is like, or you're like a very young person that doesn't have a lot of experience with relationships and love, this is probably going to, you know, be an unconventional mind blower for you, but none of those things apply to me.
Okay.
So I say it's a pass. If we move on to the last, the big budget current year horror film, oh, the week, Brightburn.
Brightburn
was written by the Lesser Gunn brothers, Brian and Mark, brothers of James Gunn,
who
the famous director of the Guardians of the Galaxy, among other things.
Uh-huh.
Directed by their buddy, David Yaroveski, who hasn't done really anything but this movie. He did, I think, some second director unit work on Guardians and done some stuff like that with the Gunn brothers, but this is his first feature film. This is essentially the tale of what if Superman came to Earth and he was psychotic. And that is an A+ concept. When I saw this trailer, I thought, hot damn, that is a really great take on Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait to see it. There's a couple problems, though. Number one, it takes an A+ concept and executes it at like a D- level.
Right.
Secondly, this, if you've seen The Boys, which is Amazon's superhero deconstruction that also features, like, this is not a spoiler, it's revealed in the first episode, a psychotic adult Superman.
Yeah.
This movie just essentially rips off a lot of the best moments of the graphic novel and subsequent series. So if you saw, like I did, The Boys before you saw Brightburn, a lot of the big, like, jaw-dropping, holy shit moments are executed better in The Boys.
Yeah, Brightburn did it first, though.
not really, because the graphic novel has all these elements in it.
Oh, does
and
it?
There's no way I don't believe that the Gunn brothers have read the graphic novel and just straight up lifted that stuff out of it.
Right.
They just changed it to like, well, that's a psychotic adult. What if he's just like a Michael Myers knifing people for no good reason? This guy's, you know, blasting people with his eye lasers. And like I said, it's all the powers of young Superman. It's just that this kid has got a fucking screw loose.
What I appreciate about this movie is that it doesn't waste any of your time.
No.
They know who they are. They are not doing anything other than this is the Superman origin story, except it's got a little twist. So immediately up front, they just put you right in the action. Mm-hmm. They don't spend any time building up to it. That being said, it's still an almost 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
With a lot and going on.
And it's dense. Like, the first 30 minutes feels like 90. And that's not even really a criticism. Like, I actually was enjoying that part of it, because they hit, like, there's so many great parts where, like, you know, in the Richard Donner Superman, where the crystal in a spacecraft calls to him, and it turns out that he's being called to the North Pole to make the Fortress of Solitude, and he uses that chip to communicate with his dead kind of like heavenly father, who is a very just and righteous person. That happens here, except for he's being called, like, to destruction. Like, apparently he's from an alien race of, like, fucking locusts, and his spaceship is calling him to dominate and take over the planet. So it's, like, every little bit, like, where the original Superman was sweet and hopeful and innocent and just, this is, like, perverted. And it plays out that way, I think really well. But then they kind of just ran out of ideas at the second act mark, and... Mm.
Right.
They just started doing the boys stuff. Like, you know what Superman can do? Superman can take you up real high and drop you. Well, you know what he can do? He can burn your skull out with his eye beams.
He can. I'm not exactly sure what his race was or what their intention was on Earth. Because they did, and you as the eagle-eyed viewer noticed this immediately the first time through, but they talk about how there are wasps, that will force other creatures into raising their young for them. Mm. And then once they're ready, come and take them back.
Yeah.
So I thought that towards the end, once he really comes into his powers, that his race would come back and take him back, or take Earth with him.
But no, it just seems like you're going to have this insane Superman run the world doing shit. And there's like all these like newspaper clippings of what he's doing. And I mean, I don't know. There's a couple. I thought Elizabeth Banks was really effective at being like, what would you be like if this was your... Well, how would Ma Clark react if this was... If Clark did this? And I think this is a pretty good... Like, she clearly loves the boy. She wants to save him. But then there's a point where, you know, she realizes that the best thing she can do is put this kid out of his misery. But he's also Superman. He's just really, really hard to kill.
Mm-hmm.
There's a semi-decent kind of like troubled youth angle to this that I thought was interesting. Like, you know, what do you do if you have a child that's exhibiting these antisocial tendencies, and what kind of therapy can you get them? And I thought there was some of that. It just like, they had a solid idea, and there's three or four supporting ideas they had with it, and not all of them worked. There is just a lot of in the especially in the third act, a lot of like really effective and gross gore. Badger from Breaking Bad fame is in this film. Matt Jones, and he gets killed hard. Like, but that was weird too. Like.
Right, the whole can.
He shows a lot of bad choices. And it's clear that this kid has murdered, or that there's been an intruder in his home, and this kid has done something terrible, and he doesn't know that he's super powered yet, I think. And his reaction is to just flee the house and just take off in his truck.
But his wife is there.
His wife is still there.
His wife doesn't know. So there's a couple of compounding things here. The boy shows up and has already made the wife, his teacher or his guidance counselor, really uncomfortable.
That's his mom's sister.
Yeah, his aunt.
Yeah.
Who's also his guidance counselor. And like, what? There's no way that would ever happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't tell her sister that her 12-year-old boy is wandering the woods at night. Mm-hmm. because clearly he can't drive. No one brought him, so he's just walking around. She doesn't tell her sister before she goes to bed.
Even though this kid's already been portrayed as being disturbed, and he just broke a girl's arm, mm-hmm. and he, you know, has a lot of pressure. So she, this guy comes and creeps her to fuck out, mm-hmm. and she doesn't call and be like, hey, I just had a really weird interaction with Kal-El over here.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Doesn't
like,
call,
no one talks to anyone.
Doesn't call her husband to say, hey, if you're heading home, can you keep an eye out for this boy who's probably going to be walking?
Yeah. I mean, it would, the thing that's frustrating is it wouldn't even matter because he's Superman. Nothing they can do can stop him.
Right, but, they're not exactly sure of that yet. They just know he's disturbed in a way.
I guess that's true. I mean, there is a way to stop him, and it involves using scraps of this, like the kryptonite thing. Like,
yeah.
apparently parts of his spaceship are lethal to him.
Yeah.
Or that metal is so strong or so sharp that it can cut him. So there is a little glimmer of hope that Elizabeth Banks is going to figure out a way to, like, you know, terminate this guy. But I don't understand what tension is ramped up by the mother being in the dark about this. And it's just completely ludicrous. There's no way these characters wouldn't call each other about the situation that just happened.
Hmm.
There's no way. And that happens throughout the movies. There's just like, you know, why doesn't this character report that this thing happened? Why didn't this character tell? It's also, I felt like it would have been more effective if the Pa Kent character, the adoptive father Superman, wasn't just like the second that anything bad, wrong, just like, I've turned completely around on this kid. He's psycho. He's got nothing. Like, way before you find out he's Superman, he's got all these crazy powers. Like, this guy just goes full on, fuck this kid that we adopted, and he's bad and he's evil, and we should, and there was none of that. And I think also this movie had been helped if instead of trying to stuff the first 30 minutes of this with like dark inversions of Superman mythos, it's just spend time showing that this kid is a sweet, innocent boy who, like, is just, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with him. So you feel the horror of him going into darkness and into the side of darkness. And the only way they've got to tell that is Elizabeth Banks's face and her grief and sorrow. But it would have been a lot. I felt like I was told and not shown, and they could have easily spent that first 30 minutes just having him spend time with the family and seeing them being sweet together and happy together to juxtapose the third act, which is truly a nightmare. But mm-hmm. I didn't give a shit about any of these characters,
right?
You know, beyond their archetype. So
right,
that didn't really work.
They're also going for like a certain aesthetic too. Like, she's this, I mean, both of the parents are very young. I still think that they're both a little bit young to be playing people who desperately want a child so much that they're going to keep the alien that lands in the field. But
yeah.
I mean, maybe tell me about the desperation of wanting a child.
I bought them in their like mid to the late 30s.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying that it's a young mentality. It's like watching an episode of House Hunters, mm-hmm. and they have all this farmland and everything, multi-million dollar properties, but she's like a miniature painter, and he's a...
Yeah.
I don't know. He's a wood canoe
they
restorer.
They have wealthy parents, yeah. is what it is. They're pretending to be farmers.
Yeah, that I guess that's just what I meant. Like there's a whole like aesthetic going on there that they tried to sell you on first.
Yeah.
Before all of their relationships are sold to you.
Yeah.
They're just told to you.
But I was bummed because I was really hoping that this would be like the early years graphic novel companion to The Boys, and it was not. It was, I think it's A-plus concept with the D-minus execution is about what it says. The effects are really good. Again, some of the violent, just like, yeah, I lost the plot of the Badger thing, but that's, I think, the kill of the movie where he just destroys this man's face. His like whole jaw is like broken, dangling off.
Yeah.
And,
it's horrible. Some of the things he does to like the waitress, even the little girl that he's got this crush on. And then I was appreciative of this because I've never seen it before, but he picks up his mom in the end and flies through a roof.
Mm-hmm.
And you see the actual effects of a person going through a building mm-hmm. all on her face.
We
just saw this in Harry Potter. They were rode on the back of a dragon through a roof and everyone's fine.
Right, right.
But that was really horrifying to me as well.
Yeah, no, like I said, there's some effective set pieces, but there was no emotional connection or really sense of horror or dread that led up to it. There's a couple effective jump scares involving this kid. They don't really explain. They don't really explain like why he invented the creepy mask and the symbol. Like to me, that was just checking off. Well, we know he should be Superman, so we need some kind of creepy fucked up cape. And S is a symbol of hope. We need.
Well, his name's Bobby Burns or something like that. So it's the BB, but also he lives in the town of Brightburn. It's the name of the movie. So the BB there too.
Yeah. Yeah. Just, so there's a couple of those things that weren't clear to me.
Here you go.
Me.
You figure it out.
I don't know. I feel like that they had in mind like a trilogy of these because clearly they're baiting a sequel at the end.
Absolutely. He doesn't get caught or he's not hurt or slowed down at all.
Yeah. But I don't know where it goes because again, everything that this movie does is done better in adult form in The Boys. And that is like, it's just damn shame because I think I would have liked this as kind of like, oh, yeah, this is kind of cool. And man, it would be fucked up if Superman was evil. But I just saw just the best version of psychotic Superman over the late summer. And this ain't it, Chief.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't it. So I think you fucked up, Gunn Brothers.
So, yeah, I feel bad. I feel like this is kind of a bummer episode. You didn't like any of the first three movies.
I mean... But that's sometimes the way it goes. And it's not like I thought Spring was fine. It just wasn't scary. And this is the spooktacular, damn it. I wanted more scares.
All right.
Especially from these guys. And I maybe if I'd known going in that this isn't really a horror movie, it's an urban fantasy romance. It's essentially what if you fell in love with a shapeshifter, you know? And also if you take the fact that she's going to eat you off the table. You know, it's Twilight. It's Twilight with a Cthulhu monster. Also, I felt like that there was I saw some advanced kind of things. I saw that said that this was like a Lovecraftian tale. I didn't buy that. There's no cosmic horror. There's no like disquieting thoughts. There's no like there's more of her out there stalking. There's like all like what. There's a little bit of body horror and there's one tentacle. That does not a Lovecraft movie make. So I felt like
I think the unknown is a Lovecraftian thing.
John Carpenter's The Thing, Lovecraft as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? We'll pick better spooks next time.
Yeah,
we'll pick better spooks. It's early days. We gotta. This is the PG. This is the Gremlins version of the spooktacular. It's got mild thrills.
Yeah,
mild thrills. We're gonna work up until as we get closer to Halloween. I don't know. I might be cashing checks that my spook butt can't cash.
Right, we've got
writing checks. I can't even get my analogies right. I'm cashing checks. My butt can't. Writing checks. My butt can't. I don't know. Does the ass write or cash checks?
What are you talking about?
You never heard of like your mouth is writing checks that your ass can't catch? Cash?
Yes, you're getting your hopes up is what you're saying.
Yeah.
And you are going to be prepared to be disappointed. So lower your hopes.
Well, I do know that
lower amounts of checks into your account.
To try not to write so many fake checks. I think we got at least one solid. Like everyone says Midsommar is going to be is amazing and scary and weird and creepy and surely we'll get something out of that.
We'll see. We're not exactly sure. We're not willing to say for certain which movies we're going to cover in the next two volumes coming out this month. But we will be covering a lot of other movies. If you go to the forums.baldmove.com, we've got a cinematic spooktacular thread going where you can throw out your suggestions. You can. We're involved in that discussion, saying what we have and haven't watched and the current contenders for movies right now.
You never heard of our spooktaculars. Again, the previous year's coverage are in the notes, and we have broken down dozens of scary movies over the years. And there's a couple goodies.
Tens of movies have been covered. Tens.
Dozens. There's dozens of them out there. We'll be back in 10 days for Spooktacular 3, Part 2, More Search for More Spook.
No.
Until then,
give
our
proper title.
Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Cecily.
See ya. And you can mash. And you can monster mash. The monster mash. And do my graveyard smash. Then you can mash. You'll catch on in a flash. Then you can mash. Then you can monster mash.